with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back. And our second guest is here, and I would like to introduce him at this time. His name is Dr. Gil Mobley. That's M-O-B-L-E-Y. He is a board-certified, residency-trained emergency trauma physician who has practiced in two U.S. states and in medical missions to Guatemala for decades. He's a graduate of Georgia Regents Medical University in Augusta, Georgia, and has studied infectious diseases all of his life, especially pandemics. In addition to his status of being an ER physician, he is also a microbiologist who obtained his Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Georgia in Athens. In 2014, towards the height of the Ebola crisis, Dr. Mobley boldly wore a hazmat suit emblazoned with the words, and I quote, "The CDC is lying," and he did this at the Atlanta International Airport, and this event attracted widespread international attention and resulted in President Obama naming an Ebola disease czar within 48 hours. Dr. Mobley, welcome to the program.
It's a privilege to be on this program, vent with some things I think everybody needs to know, and especially the sophisticated, upscale, ahead of the future town of Austin, Texas. I was down there for a conference within the past few months. It is a fine city.
Indeed. You know, let's see if I've ever been there. I am in the Chicago suburbs.
Okay.
And our network
Gotcha. Well, super. I said Austin, Texas, as it showed up on the caller ID, and next to Seattle, Chicago's my number two place to be. I love it. Anyway, seriously, right. Oh, Lord.
Oh, okay. It's good.
I'm glad I'm not in Seattle right now. Oh, Lord.
It's tough to be anywhere in the United States right now, but in Chicago, oh, my gosh. They have us we're just kind of holed up. I listened to a broadcast yesterday where they ask us to literally stay in our houses starting 5 o'clock today until April 7th. And they said, you must stay 6 feet away from everybody, and you must do this, you must do that, really stay away from each other. And the governor has given this information, surrounded by all these people who were as close to him as one foot. So what do you know? I don't know. Maybe they're immune to such things. Anyway, welcome
to
the program.
It makes you wonder. Well, thank you. And it makes you wonder if they're on prophylactic chloroquine or something. Or, you know, how could they? What a bad signal if a picture's worth a thousand words. OMG, you know.
Yes,
oh,
right.
Gee. And some of them already have hoarseness, like the president. Just because you have one negative test, you breathe no sigh of relief. You could be a month into shedding this virus, or even asymptomatic shedder and just infecting people right and left, and it still be negative. You know, it's just, if I had to design a microbe that continually amazes me every few days with something new about its pathogenicity and its morbidity and its mortality, oh my gosh, this thing is an ongoing. But go ahead with what you're saying about what's happening locally down there.
Stay
home. Oh, we've got to. Yes. Oh, I mean, this is crucial, but go ahead with where you're going with that. We have got to immediately cease what we're doing. You know, everybody's heard blunting the curve, blunting the wave. Already hospitals will be just slammed, and you must consider that the hospitals are already gigantic, huge cruise ship contagion.
Oh, absolutely. If you want to get sick, go to the hospital. There you can pick up C. diff, you can pick up a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, it's incrementally worse now that this thing is not only, just look at the ways that it's transmitted. If I can talk about that just for a second.
Sure.
You know, now,
okay,
of course.
So it's a real thing. It is not just something that they made up. It is, let's establish whether it is real or whether it's phony or whatever. Let's establish that. You're a microbiologist and a doctor. Is it real,
It is real, but as far as the pathogenicity, it is in the unreal realm because it just stretches the imagination. You know, if you took the worst of every bug you know out there, let's say, for instance, the high infectivity of hepatitis A, and let's couple that with Montezuma's Revenge, this stuff is equally as, you know, we know about the respiratory droplets. We know about touching a surface and going to your eyeballs, but there are so many other ways to get this. The respiratory droplets are actually aerosolized. That means because they become one with the air, just like particles that are suspended in a dark room on an early morning, and the sunlight comes through like a laser beam. You can see those particles suspended there. That's what this virus does, and it has these little spikes like sails. And we'll tell you more about what makes those spikes unique, but those can travel 200 meters and infect 200 meters away in high concentrations.
Wow. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. We are back with Dr. Mobley, and you were talking about looking at things in the sunlight. And
yeah, we're talking about the real and unreal aspects of this bug, this coronavirus, this novel coronavirus that emerged in 2019. That's why we call it COVID-19. And it's very real. We have people dropping that I know in Springfield. We can get to the three staff that I think have it. There, we've been waiting 10 days for test results. I can get to that in a minute. But it is absolutely real. And it is just a microbiologist, a person that has studied pandemics all his life, is just stretches the imagination. And I'd like to just get into some of those aspects. You know, we've all known that the diseases, the flu and the cold, are transmissible by projectile. And you've probably seen on the internet how far just a sneeze can go in a still room, sometimes 15 feet. And, you know, air compression can cause quite a bit of force. Similarly, these people have real bad diarrhea, and explosive diarrhea can similarly propel the droplets in like manner. So we've known the droplets. That's why, you know, you cough into your elbow, or you isolate yourself from somebody that's coughing, or you open the window. In this manner, don't forget that dilution is the solution to pollution, okay? So the more ambient air, the more windows that are open, the less you're going to get. And almost every infectious disease is dependent on what the seeding is, how many you get initially. This is why doctors come down with it real quick. They're seeing it all the time, and they're getting a bunch of it. But a few bugs here and there, they're not going to overwhelm it, okay? So we've known the respiratory droplets, and we've known the surfaces, you know, where you touch something, and then you touch your eyeballs or your lips or something like that. We know that. But this aerosolization, where it can be aerosolized and hang in a room almost indefinitely, where it becomes like deodorant. If the air is still in a room, you're going to smell it 20 minutes later. And speaking of surfaces, it could last on surfaces from, you know, hours to days, apparently, depending on the humidity, and probably whether it finds something to live and reproduce, like other poop or dander or something like that, you know. I know it's dinner time, you know, in Central Time Zone where I'm at as well, but we got to talk about some pretty scary stuff. So, but worse than that, are you okay?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, worse than that, the first OMG was that it spread fecal orally. Left off saying, meaning like Montezuma's Revenge. How many times have you come back from Mexico, and I go to Guatemala all the time, and my group or myself don't have some gastroenteritis? It passes. It's a virus. It's just everywhere. It's like hepatitis A, thank goodness. We're vaccinating ourselves. And when hepatitis A makes its way into a restaurant, everybody, the whole community that's been there the last 600, you know, patrons has to be tested and treated or whatever, you know, assume they're hot, you know, and we snap it down. This stuff is more contagious that way. I started tearing up. This is goodbye to my dear friends in Guatemala. It's just not standing 6 feet away. You cannot find water around there except through the water project we got coming down from the highlands of bringing rainwater down that's not fecally contaminated. I mean, Lake Atitlan is just, you just can't find, you know, a famous microbiologist said, if shit phosphoresced, the whole world would glow. Okay?
Wow.
And, you know, that's just the way it is. That's why we're fortunately vaccinated against hepatitis A. And in Springfield, you know, I live on 4 acres. We're, all my neighbors, we're on a big well, 9 of us, but it's on the aquifer. And you know, we don't chlorinate the water, and when we have it tested, there is an acceptable amount of fecal coliforms that are tolerable. And basically, after a certain threshold, we worry about it. What's that virus? It's going to be showing up there as well, because it's going to go in the aquifer. And so when do we have to start a boil order? Let's hope we don't find out the hard way. So fecal, oral, and then... Then, as if that wasn't enough, we learned that it's blood-borne, which means like HIV and hepatitis B and hepatitis C. If I've got a cut on my hand and it scratches up against the box, you know, it doesn't have to go to my eyelid, you know, to get contaminated. It's just like, boom. And that comes from, you know, they say the fusion between the snake and the bat, where, you know, just the fusion of genes, it had all this. And where do you get the fusion of a snake and a bat? Well, maybe from the market that the guy's selling them both.
Right.
Now, it could be a bioweapon, and if it was, I would assume that it escaped by accident, because who else would want to totally destroy the way life is as we know it on the planet? And if we don't play freeze tag immediately, this is gonna do it.
Wow. Well, that is very
thank you for letting me. I know. Yeah. Thank you for letting me vent. Could you tell it's been pent up?
I have. I have always. When I flush a toilet, I keep the lids closed. I do not flush a toilet because it just is not a good idea. I never thought of that, but that's so wise.
That's so wise.
Because if you sit on the toilet and flush the toilet while you're sitting there, you can feel the spray. So
I
always close the toilet lid before I flush the toilet. Because if you it'll go onto your toothbrush. It'll go onto whatever's sitting around.
I know. And it's honest to God the truth. You can catch this through flatulence if it's carrying particles. It's just like anything else. You know, it's not only gas that composes of flatulence. I mean, just smell, I hate to say this, but your underwear after a day of eating beans, and that's just not gas hanging in now, those fibers, ladies and gentlemen. You know, those, you know, and these little coronaviruses just are carrying the little reservoirs of Petri dishes. You know, this is where a radio station hung up on me the other day. Seriously. I mean, you go, oh, this guy's crazy. No, this is science. So, study about 200 meters, you can Google 200 meters and coronavirus aerosolized. The study says it can be infectious from a decomposing body from 200 meters away. Oh my gosh, this makes funeral homes obsolete. Bodies are wildly infectious, and much so more than Ebola. You couldn't catch Ebola necessarily. Yeah, you know, you touch them at the funeral. You hug them, the dead body, you know. Yeah, it was a little hard until they start just exploding with blood. Then it's, you know, aerosolized and everything else. But my God, every single way, get rid of the bodies and the wildness that they had incinerators all over China. makes perfectly good sense. You're not going to contaminate by burying them the groundwater forever if they're going to be living in bodies. You're not going to put formaldehyde in them.
Oh, that's the worst thing. I wouldn't. I don't want to destroy the earth. I want to be cremated.
I know. Well, what we're talking, how many people, look, you know, there are hundreds of deaths today in Italy. It's a relatively small country compared to New York City. What are we going to do with all the bodies? You know, the health centers, boom. They're already gigantic contagions, closed down. You're crazy if you go in for a gallbladder to deliver a baby. Find somebody to come to your house and hope and pray for the best. But it's a pitiful, pretty scary situation out there. And you know, you started the program by saying, you know, in 2014, I was saying that the CDC is lying. Ladies and gentlemen, our government is lying. I've been waiting 10 days to try to get 3 employees tested. I swear they have it. And the hospital call today says that Quest is still so far behind because they've just been backlogged because they promoted it nationally. As soon as states are getting the local testing, they can get it done. So they just started local testing Thursday in Missouri, but my tests are still hung up in Quest. You know, we do DOT physicals. We had to close down and assume the worst till proven otherwise. You can't get testing even for healthcare professionals. And this N95 mask shortage, we've been out of those for 3 months. You know why? Because China bought them from us, even though they were made in China. Ask Menards. They sold the last bit to China that they got from China, like 100,000 masks, you know. And that is also a lie. And the medical supply chains right now, like Hankins Medical Supply in Springfield, Missouri, that supplies all of our independent clinics that are not affiliated with the hospital and stuff, he says he's heard nothing even to this day about N95 masks.
Okay, so what is the test? What does the test? How do they do a test?
Apparently it goes way back in your nasal pharyngeal area where it almost goes down your throat and you can cough it up. Like you see people that can pass a tube or a garden snake through their nostrils and it comes out your throat. Well, it goes down there way back in the middle of it, halfway. Okay, and it's just a horrible thing, like water up your nose, but that's where some microbes live that are hard to get otherwise. People that get gonorrhea in the mouth, you can't treat that with regular stuff, even though in the urethra tract you can, because it's hidden way back there, okay, in the tonsils and all that stuff where blood doesn't penetrate. That's where this got to go. And then you put it in a special preservative, which requires, you know, having, as well as this tube, you know, you can order swabs, but they've got to go way the stink back there. You're not going to put a wrong one with wooden or things like that. Then you put it in preservative, then you send it to the lab, and they immediately freeze it. And that's important because you worry about preservation time because you're looking for the actual raw RNA rather than, say, for instance, a lot like influenza A and B, you're looking for the body's reaction to it. Is the antibody there? Do you have it? You know, and or most of the hepatitis, you get this antibody and this antibody. So it is a dreadfully unpleasant test, but again, if I had to design a microbe that was the worst example, it would be something you can't do yourself. They say, well, we'll tell people to do it. You know, I can't even stick a little cuticle scissors in my nostril without sneezing. You know, a half inch, let alone 3 inches, something's going to go back there. You're not going to get good samples. And then you got to have the reagent. You know, that is probably what has held up a lot of the problems already, is they were apparently short reagent. Well, it sounds like, you know, if we can make meth, if we can make antibiotics, we ought to be able to make the reagent pretty damn quick. But now it's just who has the authority to do it, and the states that are doing it have figured it out themselves. And the raw truth is they're largely blue states.
The other thing, too, is that some of the tests just say, well, just take your temperature. That's not a test. Now, Dr. Jennifer Daniels described all these tests that should be taken in order to determine what's wrong with your body? And she talks about this one where you put a tube down your throat or one, you know, in other places. And taking your temperature doesn't cut it, right?
Well, it can usually differentiate this from the seasonal cold, which is still going around, because you don't get a fever with a cold. And number two, it tells that person you're highly infectious and get off the street, and the Chinese would throw you in prison if you resisted or break your neck, because they understand these are wildly infectious people. So it would be a good way to cut down pretty darn quick who's infected and make damn sure you keep them locked up, because they probably just don't have a urinary tract infection or something else. And you can't trust negative tests. That's what I'm saying. It takes a while to turn positive, so you have lots of false negatives. Just because President Trump is negative, because he sounds stopped up, doesn't mean he doesn't have it. You know, somebody else in the White House already has it in Vice President Pence's office. You have to assume everybody already has it. A couple of weeks ago, just about a week ago now, one of the leading papers said it's everywhere already, and it is everywhere already. But we need to stop it to those few that haven't been exposed yet, and make sure that we can blunt this curve and just try to save the hospital infrastructures. If not, try to keep us from being totally overwhelmed with the body surplus and what to do with all these highly infectious nidus of infections, you know?
Right. Yeah. Oh, goodness. What a terrible thing that it's... We are in deep trouble, literally.
Well, the fact that these healthcare workers are now being told not to wear the homemade mask is highly controversial, but honestly, it makes all the sense in the world if you understand that most people don't wear the mask properly. The masks you can make do nothing more than your underwear containing a flatulent smell in a room. And they become a petri dish, you know, that are moist, that are at body temperature, that are just concentrated on the outside from you breathing the bug out if you got it, or you're concentrated on the inside, or vice versa, for you breathing it out or concentrated on the other side. And it's just not like touching a can of beans that the stocker at Walmart put up at 5 a.m. and it's 9 a.m. and you're reaching behind the bag and you go, oh, my God, that's the one that's just back there. No. You're talking about a petri dish that's loaded with that stuff. So where are you going to discard them? And besides, you know, even though it's a great thing, you know, that this is what we've done, it becomes the protest movement of, well, we weren't prepared and nobody is paying attention and somebody was asleep at the wheel. You know, so, you know, other than it being a protest, you know, just saying this is what we got to do, they are harmful. Now, will it keep the respiratory stuff from flying across 15 feet when you sneeze, like we talked about at the beginning of the program? Yep. but then it becomes a massive super, you know, nidus of infection, just the worst mess you've ever seen. So I can understand where, you know, it's kind of like since in one state or one city or somewhere they said, doctors quit, you know, you're going to be dismissed, you're going to be disciplined if we see you wearing a homemade mask. Well, even the surgical mask, I think they help, but a little bit, they'll keep the droplets, but you got to know what to do with it. You got to assume
right.
That mask is filled with the patient's nastiest viruses at all. Besides, the surgical masks aren't going to stop the coronavirus any more than it's going to stop the cologne that you spray to see if it works. Now, N95 masks do. A properly working N95 mask stops the smell of a cologne like a gas mask. That's how we fit type test them. You just can't put on one. You're supposed to have a fit test to make sure your chin and your mustache doesn't do anything, you know, and you use a little powdered saccharin. But, yeah, they're not simple things. No substitute.
All righty. We will be right back in 3 minutes. Stay with
Thank
us.
Thank you.
back with our guest, Dr. Gil Mobley. Do you think that somebody created this as a bioweapon, or?
From what I know about the Asian markets, it's conceivable that just through randomness this happened, but it just has the worst of every imaginable disease that you can imagine. It is an absolute collage of a nightmare of each disease's transmissibility, with even the false negatives like TB. It's impossible to figure out you're into that until a long while. It is just not only that, but the rapidity of its spread. It's like the Bible verse, "Oh, death, where is thy sting?" Well, the sting, it comes as the other things associated with the death, like the family squabbles or issues that come like that. Those are the ugly tentacles. In this pandemic, it's not just the people falling dead among us, which are oftentimes the weak, but just a furrow of thinning out with no immunity assured. But it seems to hit very, very fast, which means it's going to be decrippling to the very infrastructure. You know, at this juncture, we got to look at our automobile and go, of the thousands of pieces in there, how many pieces are absolutely essential for the function of it? You know, most of them probably not, the window shield and the doorknobs and the light switches and all that. But how many pieces are absolutely essential for it to run? Probably around 1,000. Or maybe 500. It's absolutely essential for it to get you one place to another. But if one part, or maybe the lug nuts or two, maybe, okay. Same thing with the intricacy of a power plant here in Springfield, Missouri. You got the coal that needs to be produced, brought by the train, you know, and all the electric plant that generates it, and the linemen. There's going to be a high absentee rate. There's going to be a high double income, no kid. I don't have to go in because we're set as it is. There's going to be plenty of people that have to stay home because their kids are home, and they're going to have a tremendous shortage of parts as well because we can't get anything from China. And besides, it's a national lockdown. So I just can't see how we cannot, in a worst-case scenario, which one of the rules of medicine is expect the worst to proven otherwise, is what are we going to do when the chlorinator fails at the city or water system? Or what are we going to do when we don't get the coal delivered? Or what are we going to do when the pharmacies can't get their medicines for? So they came up with a list a month ago of medicines that we'll be likely short of already. That's where the problem is. And already there are hospitals in the United States where the ER last night could not find a surgeon to take out a hot appendix in a young child.
Oh, my gosh.
That's where the sting is. The sting is the elective surgeries that are going to go bad. I started wondering, you know, what happened? What would happen if I had my gallbladder attack and I knew I was facing death if I didn't go, or a coronavirus cruise ship?
Yes. Okay, we will be right back. This is the top of the hour. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Our guest is Dr. Gil Mobley. That's Mobley. And he is a certified residency-trained emergency trauma physician and has practiced in two U.S. states and in medical missions to Guatemala for decades. And we were talking about, COVID-19 and why there is a special morphology involved. And you say that it's an RNA virus, a single-strand molecule, as opposed to a double helix. So what does that do?
Just like a ladder that has more than one side of the support broken, a DNA strand that is double-stranded will still have some integrity to it. But a single-strand DNA is just like one strand of a ladder, and it has no other collateral support, and it's much more prone to break, to drift, to accept and give other particles. That's why we worry that, oh my gosh, this thing is going to be mutating, it's going to be drifting, and it's going to be just like the common cold, where we don't have a vaccine against it. And well, I'd say about maybe 25% of the common colds are a kissing cousin to this. It's another coronavirus. So what if the common colds that came around, you know, they just swapped off with that? That is what is just so one of the things about this being an RNA virus. It is just every day something gets worse to make this the perfect storm. The Murphy's Law of microbiology and pandemic epidemiology just makes you want to, just how could this be conceived?
We were talking about it being a perfect bioweapon. There are a lot of people who claim that it is bioengineered.
It could entirely well be. It would be the perfect one, and lab accidents happen all the time. They do. And where would they have the access to this? In Wuhan. I mean, that's where you would want. That's where we've got. Okay, Wuhan lab has been controlling what goes into our bodies for a long time, depending on what their surveillance shows as far as what flu virus jump species in those markets there. You want them to be there watching it. So it makes sense that A, they identified it, B, they knew what the hell what was going on, most likely, and C, that they probably could have alerted the world quicker. But I suspect they had it. I suspect this is a clue. The only people that would intentionally release this microbe would be the tribe that also has the vaccine. Who's not getting sick? That, other than that, this is the most demented human being on the face of the earth, or group of people that wanted to do this to end, you know, mankind as we know it on this planet. You understand? So the only people that would do it would have to have already had a vaccine or been working on it. Who might be? China might have been working on it. Certainly they knew the degree that this would stop life as we know it. It wouldn't be intentional,
but what would be their motive? Their economy is going like mad. They're building. They're cleaning up their environment.
Why I say it's a mistake, but they must. I mean, they were studying this thing, it could happen in nature, but it also makes more sense that they were bioengineering the perfect bioweapon. It makes perfectly good sense. It doesn't make any sense that they would release it intentionally.
Oh. Okay.
Accidents happen all the time, even with smallpox, even with the plague that started at the CDC. That's why the CDC's also had buildings that implode. You know, when I was growing up in Atlanta, we called it the Communicable Disease Center. It made us nervous. We'd go, hold our breath, and we'd go by it. Well, that's reasonable. That's, you know, one of the few places in the world that these places are that can contain these that are self-imploding, you know, and just phenol wash. You know, phenol is the number one disinfectant that we know of. By the way, I heard that these microbes, that unless the gel is, I think they said 60% alcohol? Maybe they said 16. But either one, you know, that's why we don't allow it in prisons and kids' wards, because you can drink it and get it drunk on it, I guess. Your breath might smell a little lavender even. But that's a lot of alcohol to get those bugs off, you know? Good God, I can imagine. And the fact that they're resistant to just a light wash. You know,
so
a lot of my...
Could have been creating it without realizing that it could get out and...
Oh, and just be so outrageously terrible, yes. You know, they had no idea what they had created. This is the typical Frankenstein, you know, and, you know, they probably were vigorously working. They may have even been doing experimental vaccines on their own people. This is China. Mm-hmm. Of course they were. If it was a bioweapon, you know dang good and well they were. Look up the monkeys. You know, my God, there was a lab in D.C., I can't remember the disease, it was highly communicable, that in Washington, D.C. escaped a bio-containment level 4 lab that could have wiped out our government and the whole planet. I don't remember what it was. Maybe it was bubonic plague. I don't know. But accidents happen. And they happen all the dang time in microbiology.
Wow.
I remember when I was getting my microbiology degree, an undergraduate, my specimen was coccidiomycosis, an unknown. I could look at the test tube and see it looked like a wad of spit that was just horrible fungus that you get from bats. But God, you know, it was wonderful. You know, it came directly from the CDC, but, I mean, stuff is, that could have been a bomb right there.
It always is amazing to me that maybe it's not so amazing that that governments are even working with all of these things, given the opportunity or the accidental release of things. And you could always blame it on, oh, it was an accident, when maybe it wasn't an accident at all.
Well, the only people that would do that would be the very tribe that has a vaccine that can protect their own. That's the only way that I can say that somebody would want to do this, unless they were just wildly demented and say, this earth deserves to be preserved. It's overpopulated. It's groaning with pollution. It's time to be thinned out. You know, for decades, you know, we've known we're past due for a pandemic just the way it goes. But now, you know, they try to compare this to SARS 16 years ago. There were 16 times more flights out of China this year than there were back then during SARS. And just as soon as it gets to the United States, it just, you know, goes around like wildfire. I'm tired of hearing we stopped the flights from China. All that did is stop 10 days of the dandelions that you avoided being blown in your yard because you put sheets down at the last storm, and then, you know, 5 days later, another storm comes in and blows new dandelions in because they already matured in your neighbor's yard, the brand new ones. All it did is delay it maybe a week at most to stop flights from just one country. You know, they had already been seeding the whole world. Some of my thoughts can be found at Dr. Gil Mobley, or Mobley, as we say down south, Dr. Gil Mobley, but just at Dr. Gil Mobley on Twitter. And I want to make sure that when we come back from this upcoming break, that we talk about, you know, the rules of survival, the rules of three, and then 10 items, I think, that we ought to think about having on hand as we enter into dystopia. We won't get into all of them, you know, on here, but I hope to make a video in the next day or so about some of them. And number one, dog food. I'll tell you why you got to have dog food. You know, it is a great source of nutrition. And the Wilderness Medicine Society, we tell our hikers, our trekkers, don't carry peanut butter and the M&Ms. Get into it feeling too overly confident, day two or three into the trek. And when you get hurt, it's not going to be there. We say carry a good quality dog food. It has everything you need, and your dog can eat it too.
Wow. So,
yes. You know, I mean, I just don't know if it's going to make my poop smell like dog poop or not. I think that's unique bacteria in their gut, but I don't know if we talk again. I just might let you know.
Right. Now, there's also a video going around that claims that the CDC has the patent, that the CDC owns the patent for the coronavirus, and that Bill Gates funded one of the corporations that created the the coronavirus that the foundation and it's they show the paperwork and
it's entirely possible. What I doubt they did it at his directive, though. You know, like here, get a virus is going to to wipe out mankind as we know it on the planet. You know, I mean, it's entirely, you know, as deep as his pockets go, as much money as he's given, you know, it's got to have wound up in nefarious hands. You know, you just can't micromanage that much. The theory stands, especially with a propensity for accidents.
Right. Yeah. It's just interesting that, and I know that there are antiviral herbs that you can supposedly take, and they will help you to get through this, to you know, overcome this. So there's a lot of information going around. It's learning what is really actually going to help, whether it's eating dog food or whether it's taking.
Dog food won't help. Well, dog food will not help, but when you've run out of everything else and we're a year and a half into this and we're out of food and all you have is the rainwater that you have some chlorine shock from your pool, which is another one of the 10 items you want, whether you have a pool or not, it's what we use in municipal water systems. You know, you can sustain yourself for a dang year on 50 pounds of dog food and be just perfectly fine if you don't like catching the squirrels with a have a heart trap out and back. That's we're talking dog food. We're talking dire end times survival.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking, dog food, not for, you know, pleasure, for heaven's sakes. I'm trying to muster up eating just one nibble with some tuna or something, just as, you know. But anyway, yeah, seriously, the Wilderness Medicine Society tells their doctors, carry dog food for when you get stranded by that August snowstorm on the Cascades, you know, or something like that. That, you know, when you have you get lost, you know, you'll get into the peanut butter and everything. You'll be too cocky the first days into your trek and go into the stuff, and then when you do get hurt, you won't have anything. But if you carry dog food, boom, it'll save your life when you need it the absolute most.
Wow.
Yeah, just little things like
well,
that.
There's so much information out there, and I think the worst thing about this whole situation is the fear and the anxiety that is causing so many people that just exacerbates their stress level to the point that they get incredibly anxious, and it is just adding stress. Upon stress.
Well, it's time for fast thinking. It's time for fast thinking. Like, what are you going to do to protect me, my four, and nothing more? Is what you know. The problem with the current world is that people aren't going to be looking out for you. The federal government isn't going to be buying your locality respirators or N95 masks. We are
absolutely.
So we got to be having each other
to help you.
I know. We got to.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah. No, we got to just watch each other's backs and just make sure that, you know, like all politics is fought on the local level, well, so is this response. The only thing that we can do, you know, right now, you know, most people are going to get this, period, but we need to spread it out so we just don't overload the systems immediately, and that means stopping what you're doing. It doesn't mean just avoiding people up to 6 feet. It doesn't mean limiting your whatever the trip is. Be stopping everything immediately. You know, you can't have a pseudo, you know, lockdown and expect anything better than what Italy's going through. They've been through a mandatory severe, and they're not even blunting it at all. They say China has been, you know, no new cases recently. Look what they did. They locked people in their gigantically huge apartment complexes, and they would break their necks if they had a fever, and they resisted to go to these gymnasiums where they sit on a 5-gallon can and move. In Singapore, you would get arrested if you had bubble gum. The Americans aren't going to fall in line and click their heels. You know, we're rebels by spirit. And another thing, when the human being is hungry, we revert to animalistic thinking. It's like the patient that has been cooperative, the gunshot wound fellow that's coming in, and he let me put a chest tube in him, he let me put a central line in him, and you know what? He even let me intubate him. By the time we get him to the OR, he starts pulling the stuff out. What happened? He's losing his upper cognitive functions. It's like your precious dog that got hit in the road. You know, you go to help it and it bites you. That's what happens when you get hungry. That's what happens when you get drunk. If you get really drunk, really hungry, you just start shoveling the food in like an animal without forks and knives. But, you know, that's what shock does. That's what hunger does. You don't think like a rational human being. And that's what scares me. We talked about no medicines being available. The water may not be coming, you know, and this, that, the other. But what does hunger do as far as crime and reverting to animalistic, you know, behavior? We've got to make sure that, you know, the neighbors are connected, that you know, cell phone towers may not last. Do we have landlines? I think, you know, they may last a little bit longer. But what about little walkie-talkies to talk to your neighbors? You know, we're all out here on 4 acres. We've got them now. They think I'm a little paranoid, but people thought I was a little out there on Ebola. But everything I said in 2014 about Ebola came true. I said it would cross over to Congo. I said it would be endemic on the planet Earth. I said it would come to the United States. I said it would pass among healthcare workers. And do you know how many Ebola cases we've had in Africa since August? 3,000. 3,000. Just, it is endemic on this planet, just as I predicted. Why? We were slow to the gate. So what can we do for the future? Well, you know, we can talk about that after the break as well. But, you know, at Dr. Gil Mobley is how you find some of my thoughts on some other items of the 10 things I think we need to survive in this dystopia we're apparently headlong into.
Already you see people at the grocery store fighting over toilet paper. And so people are not very... they're not very nice to each other, strangers, and it's a problem now.
And they're not even hungry, and their little boys and girls aren't already starving.
Right.
I know. That's what I'm talking about, the collateral damage. It's just not the medical morbidity and mortality, the car accidents that can't get fixed because of the ERs, you can't even get through the halls. You know, it's not just the medicines that aren't there. You know, it's that as well. It's just the arms of the tentacles of this thing is much worse than just the virus itself.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
now your website is Dr. Gil Mobley.
Well, my Twitter is just my Twitter account will work for now, and that's just on Twitter. It's at Dr. Gil Mobley, at DrGil. Mobley. My clinic had to close temporarily until we get A, negative test, B, ability to protect ourselves from the patients and our patients from us. And we have three healthcare workers that are down that we've been waiting 10 days for the test. So anyway, yes, you can find the information as well as the video that we want to have. The other items of the 10 things I wouldn't go into dystopia about, and the three rules of survival.
Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
With you and me, it starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back, and our guest is Dr. Gil Mobley. Did I say it right?
Yes, Mobley Bobleys are the same, kind of depends on where you were raised.
Okay, I just posted your Twitter account in the chat room so people can tweet you or listen to you.
Super. It's been largely inactive. As I started the broadcast almost telling you that I'm hoarse, and it's from talking to many stations, but also yelling at the crows out back. So thank you for your patience this afternoon, and I'm glad it's coming through well. I'm on my landline. And as I mentioned, I think it's important that we have redundancy in our lives, okay? Not only with our food supply, maybe in different places of the house should the robbers and bandits come or something like that, because what you have in your pantry is probably more valuable to them than gold at that point. Do some, you know.
Exactly. What would you rather have? A gold coin or some toilet paper when you need it?
Well, some food for darn sure. You know, you can always you splash some water and use some soap, you know, if you had to. And turkey basters work well. And, you know, you may want to consider making your own boudet with an enema bag. They still have them at Walmart. There's plenty of alternatives. You know, just around my house, there's endless supply of cloth. But, you know, you could always burn it. You don't want to flush it. That'd be the worst thing, is not being able to get rid of your own, you know, clog this.
Right.
You know, but you know, there's plenty of alternatives. You know, you don't need toilet paper to stay alive, for heaven's sakes. But you certainly need food and water, you know. A person can, you know, the rule of threes that I mentioned to you, you can live 3 minutes without air. You know, if you're underwater or being strangled. You know, 3 hours without heat, like you're being submerged in the Hudson River from a plane crash and waiting to be, you know, airlifted out at freezing temperature. But only 3 days without water. What happens when the electricity or the power goes down? You know, nobody had. You go through, you know, easy a couple liters a day of water to keep your body up and going. How many people have that on hand? Okay, you know, to go forward with. Not many. You know, you're going to have an alternative to that. You know, if you're, you know, in a high rise, good luck if we have multi-system failures. But if you live in a house, you know, you got to have mechanisms to purify the water, and there are wonderful ways to do it. You know, even just a clear plastic bottle will kill the viruses and bacteria in bright sunlight, especially if you put it on a black surface. It works two ways: A, the heat, and B, the UV light. Say, for instance, you had to, if you had to get it from a creek and it's got some little sediment in it, you can use alum, which is, you know, a salt of aluminum, which is harmless, or you could even use the white ash from a fireplace. The white ash is a great flocculant that'll bring some of the suspended particles along with the bacteria down to the bottom of it overnight, and then siphon that off and put it in one of those bottles, and that'll be perfectly fine water as far as bacteria is concerned. You know, down here in Springfield, it would be the wash off from you know, all the city coming down this way in the creeks. But still, rainwater, it'd be perfectly fine to, you know, to chlorinate with what? Pool shock. That's another thing that you got to have. So 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food, generally, the human being. Go 3 weeks without food before you just, boom, call it quits. So those are the three rules of medicine, that are three rules of survival that you really need to focus on, you know, as far as do you have the threes taken care of. Forget the toilet paper. Get your water. Well, first of all, get your air purified. Make sure that if people come over, you know, dilution is a solution to pollution. If they don't need to be in the house, keep them, you know, away, you know, and that, so the air, you know, the surfaces, you know, when packages are delivered from Walmart, if you have the ability to spray them down a little bit with some Clorox and get them in the sunlight, you know, that's a lot better than otherwise, because this virus can last for days, especially with these youngsters that are the UPS guys are probably got it and still working, because everybody has to work as long as they possibly can. Nobody can possibly fathom without working. So, you know, you got to assume that the packages are highly infectious. You know, thank God, goodness, I got a spot out here. I can spray them down. But you just got to assume that even for food preparation, you handle a package and then you go back to fixing your salad without washing your hands. It's fecal orally, you know, transmitted. So there are all these implications no matter where you go. You just need to be highly suspicious at this juncture that the organism is lingering everywhere. Now, after you get it, you get an immunity? Well, to that particular one, yeah. Yeah, but then again, the cold comes around every year because it mutates. And also, often we've heard that after you're cured, the virus is gone. It's no longer on that painful swab they stick back there for the fifth time. you can get it again, apparently, and it comes back with a vengeance. Because it's the same infection, but by that time, your body's really recognized it. And it's got the reaction really revved up. It's like, what drives you crazy with poison ivy? Is it the actual toxin that got on there? No, it's the body's reaction to the little the phytotoxin. It swells and it weeps. That's what the lungs do. It's the reaction. Therein is the problem.
Right.
At Dr. Gil Mobley on Twitter, at Dr. Gil Mobley, and more of this is discussed.
Okay, we will be right back momentarily.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back with Dr. Gil Mobley. We do have a question from a gentleman in New York. Let's have him ask that question. And his name is Frank. Frank, go ahead. Ask your question.
Yes, thank you to both of you. Doc, I'm wondering, what is it that kills a virus?
Most accessible to us would be concentrations of alcohol that probably exceeds some of what's in the Purell, a sustained soap and water wash of a good several minutes. Ultraviolet light does. That's why I leave my packages outside in the sunlight and rotate them through the day. And so does heat. That's why I have them on a black reflective plastic bag, the 55-gallon type thing, so it reflects it for a while, and why underneath that is a little insulation to isolate it from the cooler earth. You know, so those are the things that we have most readily accessible, and the ultraviolet light, as we mentioned prior to the break, you know, we'll sterilize water in a clear bottle on a full day. So those are some of the most readily accessible things. And there's extreme heat with extreme pressure, like autoclave, those type things. But as far as in the human body, we're working feverishly to try to figure out, you know, what chemical can stop the reproduction, or at least stop maybe the attachment with the binding molecules or something like that. But hope that helps, Frank, and what a good question. And again, one of the rules of medicine is to expect the worst till proven otherwise. You know, if possible, and you're at high risk, and you got to talk to somebody, be upwind from them. If you got area to move around, seriously, this stuff can carry the disease. You can Google 200 meters and decomposing bodies and aerosolized, those words right there, and see that, you know, aerosolized particles can carry this disease 200 meters. So, you know, expect the worst till proven otherwise, Frank, and a very good question. And God bless you guys in New York City. So many of my dearest friends have wound up there.
Yeah, so part B of my question is, what is it that causes the protein shell around the what causes the protein shell to dissolve or digest?
Well, the number one thing would be phenol. There is no stronger antimicrobial in the world than phenol, and as a matter of fact, all other bactericidal and virucidal, or parasites, you know, for parasites as well, it is all compared to what we call the phenol coefficient. you know, what percentage of phenol would be. So that, you know, unfortunately, it's toxic and it's carcinogenic and things like that needs to be controlled. But the phenol is number one thing that, you know, on a surface would. And that's probably a dang good question. I'm wondering what these guys are spraying in these moon suits as they're walking down all the streets of all these dang cities, and wondering why aren't they doing it in hospitals, you know, the same stuff already around through here, because you have to assume that these hospitals are just huge cruise ship contagions. But I think you answered my question for myself, Frank. They're probably spraying phenol.
But that I couldn't breathe that. You knew or I could breathe that on a.
No, that's why they wear gas masks instead of just N95s.
Well, how about this? How about if there was a
ozone. There's an engineer in Atlanta that has an ozone machine that kills everything on the surface and in the room. And there's some you can get at Walmart that still does, and they kill stuff on the surface as well. If somebody wants to help this engineer get it to market, ozone scares the hell out of me, but it can sterilize the hell out of an environment.
You're talking about O3, right?
Yes. Yes. No, seriously, it can be safe in low doses over amount of time and purge a small room in 2 hours, and it does nothing. You just got to pull yourself out and the animals and a plant. You know, the pot growers use it for their grows because it kills all the insects right off the bat, you know, and then they purge it. But yes. But you got to have redundancy. You know, I worry about it needs make sure there's no humans that have an infrared sensor to shut it off, to have an alarm to shut it off, to have, you know, a finger pad to set it on so you can't kill your wife in the middle of the night by setting the ozone stuff. You know, people think it stinks. I don't think it does. My SoClean machine is the same concept for my CPAP or my BiPAP machine. The SoClean you see on TV, that's ozone. Ozone kills the shit out of COVID-19. If anybody wants to get behind this engineer in Atlanta, I swear he's got it designed with enough redundant safety program to make me comfortable to say I think it's got it together. But I swear to God, great question, and you turn on a light bulb for me, Frank. Thanks for allowing me to share that.
Well, once that protein shell is vacated around the DNA of the microbe. What happens to it? What happens to the pathogen? Is it destroyed or neutralized?
Well, it loses its transmissibility, and it just it's like a human bleeding to death or being unable to breathe. You're just rendered useless. You know, I don't
so
know.
So then, how about a very strong natural? Something like serapeptase.
You know, there is got to be a cure out there, and there's got to be something.
Yeah,
to
there
slow
is.
Down. You know, but what is that? It sounds like you're maybe onto something, and there's enough gray hair in my hair to be humble and expect people to teach me all the time. So, how do we find this information, Frank?
Just looking at the information that's available. What I'm concerned about is I know that it works, but what I'm afraid of is
tell us what it is again.
Serapeptase, which is which is an enzyme which dissolves errant proteins. Now the thing is, once you dissolve that protein and shell around the organism, does it pose another danger, or is it automatically neutralized? That's what I'm not sure of.
Yeah, good question. I would suspect it's a good first step. You know, again, if there are other aspects to this redundancy. You know, that's why when we do possibly frequent studies, we want to add the Zithromax. It's the two punch that gets you down. Each can be 60% effective, and you put them together. So you've got it.
Well,
we appreciate the call.
One thing is for sure, that the greedy vultures who are now waiting in our wings for an escape and antidote of some sort are going to give us vaccines.
you know, what scares me the most about the vaccine projections is a year and a half. That's on a good day. That's if we can get everything and the people lined up and the studies done. It ain't going to be a good day, Frank. It ain't going to be a good month. It ain't going to be a good year. I don't think a vaccine is going to be on the horizon anytime soon. It's going to be proved safe. And just like the SARS, the vaccine made it a lot worse. Why? Because the body reacted worse when they saw the disease the second time. Because, oh, my God, we're ready for you. And it was lungs filling up with fluid, just like your body fills up with fluid with little bumps. When the skin contacts poison ivy, it's the reaction that gets you.
All right, Doctor. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your program.
God bless you guys up in New York City.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
What about near-infrared sauna lights? When I do my program, well, I'm sitting with my bare feet on an earthing mat, and I am sitting right next to my near-infrared sauna lights.
That's where I hit to my Google machine. if it's heat, you bet. And infrared, I don't know. I know that UV kills it. And if you hear a pleasant groaning in the background, it's my lab wanting to be fed this evening, and so I'm consoling her. Which brings me to a point. You can't get coronavirus, COVID-19, from dogs. Thank God. You know, that's good. Yeah. I hear they can carry it just like a book, I guess, could carry it that you get from your neighbor, you know. But so you wouldn't want somebody slobbering and sneezing on your dog coming right over when the delivery guys come. You know, good luck keeping your lab from them or something like that. But seriously, you need to consider that. But they're not going to transmit it unless it's like a fomite, just like something you touch.
Right. My cat, Leo, sneezed the other day, and I said to him, I said, "You don't have COVID-19, do you? Do we need to get you tested?" And, you know, he understood what I was saying. Mm-hmm. But, that's what I asked him. He doesn't talk back. We have another question also from a New Yorker, and that would be Ken. Mm-hmm. Ken in New York. Okay, Ken. Yo, Ken.
Easton Long Island, actually. Thank you for taking my call. In the better than nothing at all class, I have three ozone machines already. The smaller ones, they're 5,000 GPH. You can get them on eBay. They're not the best in the world, but if you close a room and you leave it in for 15, 20 minutes and then unseal the room, rather open the door maybe an hour or two later, it smells like a lightning storm just hit or a rainstorm. The air smells pretty fresh.
Interesting.
It has a ceramic plate.
Yeah. He's right on. I had a person have to come in my house to move some things around, and I'm on isolation since we have three in my clinic that are sick with this thing. Until the tests come in, we have to assume it. But I also had to assume that this guy was positive as well. So I stayed out of the house. He was there, and when he left, I asked him to turn on the dang device, and it has a two-hour timer on it, and I went in there with confidence. I did not worry about what I had to touch. Again, it's in redundancy, so I still did the doorknobs. I still did the light switches. I still did this. But I'm telling you, you're on to something, sir. I'm telling you, that is where the answer is. And what scares me is I would like a motion detector where it shuts off. I like a infrared detector on it where it says somebody's in the room, it shuts off. I want a sound that says it's going to go beep, 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 you know, when it starts. I want to know who started it. I want to know their fingerprint or they got a six-digit code to get in. I don't want some kids starting it and like being carbon monoxide in a car that it kills somebody. That's what I want on a unit. And I think this guy has got it.
Yes, that's understood, and fortunately, in this case, there are no kids around for that sort of thing, but...
I know, but you're certainly on it. You know, it scares me, too. I get out of the house when I start mine, but you know what? The mice don't like it, neither do the brown recluses I'm finding.
Yes.
So but what I understand is that the ozone is killing the plant. Well, first of all, the flights are going to stop and the pollution's stopping anyway. But no, the ozone is an indicator of what is happening. It's not the cause of it. Just like when we used to fly 25 years ago, the horizons weren't nearly as nasty as they are now. And you go, oh, look at all the darkness. You know, that's pollution. No, the pollution causes the darkness. Okay, so the issues, you know, if they are an indicator, may not be the actual cause of it. But you sure as hell don't want to breathe it. It'll irritate the lungs, the hell and
yes,
back, and it'll kill you. It'll kill you. It's anoxic, and also replenish the carbon dioxide. Get your plants out. Get your dog out. Get your cat out. That's why it is like a gun. You need to have the fingerprint to get into it and make it work to be safe. And I think this guy in Atlanta, you know, he may be on it if some investor that wants to deal with him. You know, my Twitter account is at Dr. Gil Mobley, at DrGilMobley, and it's been largely inactive because I've been trying to learn as much as I can and also take care of my clinic and try to steer the discussion what I can of what I really think people need to know. And thanks for hitting that point home, sir. Where you say you're from? Long Island?
Eastern Long Island, yeah. I mean, it's embedded. I've been around electronics all my life. I used to repair things when they were worth fixing. I'm retired. And they're not the strongest in the world, but it's I suppose in what you're talking about, it's a better than nothing solution.
Yes. Well, I hope so. I mean, it will kill the particles in the air, and it should in the surfaces as well. We need to verify this and validate it, but the studies are already out there that it is, you know, bactericidal against that agent. That means COVID-19.
Well, go look on eBay. They have them. Unfortunately, they are from China. I just got a replacement for one. I had one last about 6 months, and then it either developed a problem or maybe the moisture in the air has changed, and it's affecting the way it works. It does seem drier.
Yeah. When it's drier, it works better. Yeah,
I think
I expect it wouldn't surprise me if there's a short shelf life. I do have a bigger one and a smaller one, but it wouldn't surprise me. Yep, you know, people that are asking what it smells like, it's said that it smells like the air after a snap of a lightning bolt. It's said also it smells like trains emit from the spark.
It's what it used to smell like that I remember 30 and 40 years ago after it rained and lightning. And with all the crap they spray in the sky these days,
right.
I don't know.
Good point. Well, I hope you learned something this afternoon, and I've learned from our callers.
Sure. All right, I'm going to go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Boy.
Okay, I just posted your Twitter in the chat room so that people can look you up.
All righty. Well, and so it's a nice evening down here in Springfield. I haven't ventured out much. But I will go pick up these ozone things that I've been letting run all day in the clinic and see what it's like. It's a nice afternoon where you're at up in Chicago.
Yes, it's pleasant. It's not snowing.
And are people pretty much off the streets up there, or is it business as normal?
Oh my gosh. I went out yesterday morning. And the streets were, there was no traffic. It was amazing to me that the traffic was probably only a third of what it usually is on a Thursday morning. And it was probably about 9:30 in the morning. And no traffic. It was amazing to me. No traffic.
That's some bright news. Thanks for sharing that. I'm glad no people are complying. You know, the only way out at this point is to stay put. Stop what you're doing. Stop moving around. Freeze tag. You're it.
Yes. All righty. We will be right back in 3 minutes. All right, we are back. with our guest. Wow, time flies when you're getting a lot of information. And we certainly have had a lot of interesting information today. And so where should we go from here? What do we do from
with
here?
With your theme song, everybody is a hero when you stay put.
I love that song.
Really is. I've been unfamiliar with it, but what a lovely way to end this is, you know, it's up to us to get each other's backs at this juncture. You know, the government's not going to do it. And we just, everything from food to love to reaching out and trying FaceTime to, you know, expecting the worst till proven otherwise, make sure that you got a landline and some redundancy. But that's where it's going to be, is everybody can be a hero. And at this juncture, although there are all sorts of ways to intervene, you know, this you can do so much by just staying put. This thing is so transmissible that most of us are going to get it sooner or later. And the only way we can stop all the massive collateral damage, all the morbidity, mortality on the medical aspect of it, but everything else that we talked about, just right now, there is something we can do to stop moving around.
Yes, we do, and we need to.
And it sounds like you got it together up there, sounds like.
Well, we need to protect the ecosystems. We need to protect each other. We need to not view others as enemies, but collectively do what we can to help each other and not make enemies of our neighbors or be overly suspicious, but to reach out and to take care of ourselves, to take care of those within our environment. And I do love that song.
Let me say something about taking care of ourselves. First of all, we can't make a bad situation worse by going into a helpless situation. One of the first things I taught emergency medicine technicians, we learned it in Gainesville, Georgia, where I first started out. There was a kid that went down to pump out a septic tank from a poultry processing plant, and he didn't come up. And the second guy yelled down there and got, oh my gosh, he's probably asphyxiated with some of the gases, methane or something like that down there, or who knows what was being made, but it was a gas from the feces and all the dead decomposing. So the second guy crawls down there, and he's dead. Well, the third guy had enough sense not to crawl down there. He went for help, but you know, he was tempted to crawl down there and make the situation worse where nobody could have gone for help. People are going to be dropping in front of you on the street. You know, at that point, you know, they're having seizures from the fever. You're probably not going to be able to help them. You know, it just make sure that you're able to take care of the bigger disaster that's right there at your side, and you don't become problem or make it worse. You know, when I was telling my neighbors early February, when the handwriting is on the wall, that worse is going to, that it's going to hit the fan, that we need to prepare for the worst. And then, I said, I've got to go now, and I actually started to cry. I said, but I've got to stop to visit with you because I don't want to be like Zachariah Smith on Lost in Space, where he's always looking out for himself. We've got to look out for the neighbors, and that's why I told them, get stocked up. Early February, I was telling people
absolutely
to get stocked up. So we've got to look out for others. We don't want to be like Zachariah Smith of Lost in Space, that lousy
exactly
doctor.
Thank you so
Thanks
much
for this opportunity. Oh, my gosh. So you could be, you are a hero. Stay put. And dilution is the solution to pollution. Move the air where you're at.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much for being on the program.
It's been
Take
a blessing.
Care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. Chat with you next week.